Let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.
What up, Mean Militia? It's Mean Joe Grizzly, and this is the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast. And this past weekend, I got to see one of the year's most anticipated horror films, and I'm, of course, talking about The Black Phone. So, let's talk about it. This is Grizzly Grade Reviews. Man, The Black Phone was so damn good, guys. If you have not seen this movie yet, you have to go see it. It's a damn good movie. We're going to talk about it. So, first off, what is The Black Phone? So, The Black Phone is the newest movie from Scott Derrickson. If you don't know who Scott Derrickson is, let me refresh your memory. Scott Derrickson is the director and writer behind the movie Sinister. If you ain't never seen Sinister, stop what you're doing right now and go watch it. Because Sinister is, in my humble opinion, one of the best horror films we've gotten in the last 20 years. It's so unique and so well done and so effective. It's a must watch. And he's done other movies too. He did The Exorcism of Emily Rose. He did Deliver Us from Evil. He's done some pretty solid horror films, but he's also known for directing and writing the first Doctor Strange movie. And I don't know about y'all, but I enjoyed that one. I thought it was pretty good. It's one of the better MCU movies. It's at least in the top half. And he's also did the Day the Earth Stood Still remake, which I think was pretty decent. So the guy's got a pretty good filmography going right now. But after this movie, I think that he may have stepped into the realm of being a new modern master of horror. Not on the same level as like a Mike Flanagan, but he's definitely sitting at the table now. And he did it by adapting this story that was written by Joe Hill so many years earlier and bringing his style from Sinister into this movie, with the dream sequences being very similar to like the 8mm clips from Sinister. And it just works. So that's kind of given Scott Derrickson his own particular style that now you don't even have to look at the credits to see if he's the director of the movie anymore. You can just watch the movie and tell that it's a Scott Derrickson movie, which makes a level of achievement in itself that he has created a style that is so recognizable. So the story itself tells the tale of two kids from Denver, Colorado, and it's set back in the late 1970s. And it really starts out as giving you a view into the day-to-day life of these two kids, Finney and Gwen, and their life sucks. They have to deal with so much stuff every day. They're technically like the kids from the wrong side of the tracks. They don't get in any trouble or anything or cause any trouble, but they are constantly messed with this entire movie. And not only by these ruthless bullies, who these are like the Stephen King / Joe Hill style bullies that are sometimes just as terrifying or just as ruthless as the evil that the children have to face later on. They also have an alcoholic father who is physically abusive and mentally abusive, and their mother committed suicide X amount of years prior to this. And their life just sucks. There's just no other way of saying it. Their life sucks. And yet they still remain these pure good kids that don't bother anybody, don't get in any trouble. Just they're doing the right thing despite all of this horrible shit that happens to them every single day. And that's something that I want to commend this movie on, is they easily could have made these two kids a byproduct of their environment and make them these unbearable little shits that the audience can't relate to, or the audience can't wait until they die. And that's something that this movie does well, of really making you sympathize with these kids and really putting yourself in the kids' shoes. And that's one of the many reasons why this movie is so effective. So what ends up happening is you end up getting a look into their everyday routine, and on their way home they come across these flyers of these kids that are missing. And that's when we are told about the child abductor, the Grabber. And you start getting a look into their week-to-week routine, and Gwen will go stay with her friend on Friday night while Finney goes home and attends to their drunk dad. And one Friday in particular, Gwen goes off with her friend and Finney's heading home. He comes across a black van, and this guy steps out, this really eccentric looking guy with a top hat and this white face paint on, and he drops a bunch of groceries on the ground. And being the good kid that Finney is, he goes over to help. And while the two are exchanging words back and forth, the guy asks Finney if he wants to see a magic trick. And it's at this moment that the Grabber reveals himself. He sprays Finney in the face with some kind of aerosol sedation of some sort, maybe chloroform or ether or something. But either way, Finney loses consciousness and is thrown in the back of this van. Black balloons are let out at the scene, and the Grabber makes Finney his latest victim. When Finney comes to, he finds himself in the basement of the Grabber that's seemingly soundproof, with nothing but a mattress and a toilet over in the corner, and a black phone that seemingly doesn't work and is disconnected hanging on the wall by his bed. And then we're kind of introduced to the real version of the Grabber, who comes downstairs with this elaborate mask on that has these interchangeable faces that, depending on what state of madness he is in, is dependent on what face you're going to get. And you can definitely tell that there are different levels of severity, which enhances Ethan Hawke's performance even more, because when you see him change the pieces of this mask to give these different expressions of his inner self, it really makes you super uneasy, because you know by the look of the mask what level of madness you're actually going to be dealing with. And I felt like it was very effective, and I'm glad that they used this mask in the way that they did, just a genius way of doing it, because Ethan Hawke not only gives this phenomenal performance, but the fact that he can use a tool like the mask to convey so much emotion and so much terror, it's pretty awesome. I think that that's probably one of the best parts of this movie, is Ethan Hawke's performance, obviously, but his utilization of the mask makes it even better. Then we cut back to Gwen and her dealing with the fact that her brother got abducted, and we find out that Gwen has these visions when she dreams. And not only does she have these visions, but it turns out her mother, who, like we said before, committed suicide X amount of years prior, also had these visions, and everyone thought she was crazy, and that's why she supposedly committed suicide. Little plot point there. But her visions are kind of scattered and they're everywhere, but they give her clues to try to unlock the mystery of where the Grabber is keeping her brother. And the police also question her and try to get her involved in the investigation, because she's the only one that knows any information about the case, and it hasn't been released to the public. So the cops are kind of stumped by that. So they are admittedly believing in this kid's psychic dreams and stuff, which doesn't really suspend all disbelief, because back in the 70s and the 80s, police regularly consulted psychics and mediums for cases, as ridiculous as it sounds. So kind of historically accurate on how that went down in real life. So it kind of becomes this race against time for Gwen to try to find her brother. Meanwhile, Finney is trapped in the basement of the Grabber and can't find a way out, and is hitting dead ends everywhere. And then the black phone goes off. So Vinny picks this phone up, and the voice on the other end is very shaky and kind of staticky. And when he first picks it up, there's no words. It's just like static. And then as the phone continues to ring, eventually he starts hearing a voice, and he immediately recognizes this voice, and he realizes that it's one of his friends that got abducted by the grabber. And slowly but surely, he talks to four or five voices on this phone, and each one of them teaching him or telling him what to do in a specific situation or what to do to escape. And the other main voice that he hears is there's a voice in there of a kid that he's friends with. I think the kid's name was Robin, and this kid was a badass. He was the badass kid that got abducted, that was the toughest kid in school, but he wasn't a bully. He was just a kid that didn't take no shit from the bullies. And that kid and all the other ones are trying to help Finney survive this ordeal. And it kind of gives like this coming of age story at the same time, in light of all of this dire and horrifying situation. You see Finney really come into his own and realize that he is strong and he's not weak, and that he is a fighter. And it's very compelling, and it's just damn good, if I'm just being honest with you. And I don't want to really talk anymore about the movie, because I want people to go see this movie. It's great. The finale of this movie got the entire theater up cheering. It was a great experience. This year's been a good year for great audience experiences when it comes to movies, and this one was definitely one of my favorites. To see the entire audience actually get into the movie and cheer Finney on and laugh at certain situations and gasp at other situations was just a great and memorable experience. The cast is phenomenal in this movie. Both the kid actors are great. Finney has a bright future ahead of him, and the actress that plays Gwen definitely has a bright future ahead of her. She was the actor that stole the show. She was hilarious and so genuine and wholesome as a character. She's definitely the best character in the movie. And Ethan Hawke, I've already said before, Ethan Hawke may have given a all-time career performance in this movie, in my opinion. We don't really get to see him play a villain. I don't recall him being a villain but one time, and that was in Moon Knight, and he got completely wasted in that movie. I'm still upset that they got Ethan Hawke and did nothing with him. That's just bad. But anyway, I digress back. He is phenomenal in this movie, and he sells all of the mood switches and everything so well. And he doesn't talk a lot in this movie. He probably talks less than 3 minutes in this entire movie, but somehow gives you this, like I said, with his mask, utilizing the mask and utilizing his mannerisms and the little bit of words that he does use is brilliant, because he conveys every sinister and every malice-filled action that he is going to do or intends to commit before even doing it without saying a word. And I sound like a broken record at this point, but it truly is amazing. And I haven't heard many people talk about that he barely has any lines in the movie. He does talk. He's not mute, and he doesn't not talk a lot, but it's very few. He's not a chatterbox, but yet it's still super effective. And to me, he gave this performance of a lifetime. And a must-see performance. I want to see him in more villain roles in the future. I think that he missed his calling in life. He should have been a villain in the movies before he was ever considered a good guy. As far as like the violence and gore goes, there's not much. There's moments, but it's not a just a gore fest, and it doesn't have to be. And it's not really scary. I'll say that I wasn't. There was never a time where I was like, "Ew, that's rough." There was some eerie parts, but there was never anything that would just make me say, "Okay, that's kind of rough" or "That's kind of creepy." It's more on the lines of, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. So I can't call this movie a thriller, but I can't call it a horror film either. It's definitely a horror film, but it's not a full blown horror film. It's more in the vein of like a Silence of the Lambs is the best category that I can place this in. It's definitely true crime, I will say that, but with just a little bit of supernatural sprinkled into it. But either way, it's still a horror film. It might not be very scary, but I'd be damned if you're not going to be on the edge of your seat the entire time. But enough about that. Let's go on and get to the verdict. Now, I'm not going to elaborate on the conclusion of the film or really the high plot points of the movie, because I actually want people to go out and see it. So, it's one of those movies that I feel like is so good that it needs to be seen. And I went over a lot of plot points, but I never revealed the ending, and I never revealed a lot of big plot points. Most of the stuff I talked about you already could derive from the trailer. So it's not like I'm just out here spoiling this movie to where it's not even worth you going to watch anymore, because you already know what's going to happen because I told you. So I recommend going and seeing this movie for yourself and making your own judgments on it. But as far as me, I have no complaints about this movie. I don't think the movie's perfect, because there ain't but one movie that's perfect, and that's Back to the Future in my eyes. So it's one of those things that I don't have any complaints. So really, my rating is going to be based solely off of how much I enjoyed this movie. There is a couple of things that were kind of head scratchers in the beginning, but more I thought about it, everything kind of cleared up in my head about it. So don't want to give props to Blumhouse. Blumhouse gets such a bad reputation when they are literally the pinnacle of horror right now. I understand that A24's got some movies out, and I like A24 films. I love The Northman. The Northman was great. And there's a few other A24 films that came out this year that I didn't get to see that I'm really looking forward to seeing. But Blumhouse gets this rep for being like, they kind of get the rep for being like the Full Moon Pictures of this era. Like these just cash grab movies, and they do have cash grab movies, but what they've done with the Halloween franchise, what they're seemingly doing with all the classic Universal monsters, with Invisible Man being like their first test drive movie, they've released some very, very, very solid horror films, and I definitely think the good outweighs the bad. So I'm really anxious to see what else Blumhouse brings out, because this movie right here was great. But with all that being said, I think that Scott Derrickson once again strikes gold by delivering an edgier seat thrill ride that is perfectly reinforced by his signature cinematography and eerie style. The solid script, phenomenal cast, and lights out performance by Ethan Hawke as the Grabber, Scott Derrickson has firmly secured his seat at the modern masters of horror table. And with that, I give The Black Phone a 5 out of 5, and it is grisly grade guaranteed. Go see The Black Phone. It is awesome. It's the best horror film that's been released this year, period. Go see it. All right, guys, going to bring this episode to a close, and I want to thank you all for your continued support and patience with me getting these episodes out. Without y'all, none of this is possible. Thank you all so much. And I also want to give a shout out to Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. He's the guy who makes all this sick music that I use for my backgrounds and my intros and my outros. So definitely go check that guy out on Spotify or YouTube or wherever you stream music. Guy's a genius. The upcoming release schedule is going to be kind of difficult because so much stuff happens in a short amount of time. So the plan is to give y'all a review of Stranger Things Season 4 Part 2. Then either on the following Monday, give you a grisly guide of Jason Aaron's run on Thor, because that's the run that's being pulled from to give us Thor Love and Thunder. And then the following Wednesday, give you a grisly grade review of Thor Love and Thunder. That seems to be the most logical plan and the best way to do it, because our release days are on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Sometimes those days get pushed, like with this episode here is getting released early Thursday morning because my day job is very demanding and sometimes I can't get stuff out on time. So again, I really appreciate y'all's continued support and patience. That's probably how I'm going to do this release. It could be different. I could release on Monday the Stranger Things Season 4 Part 2 review, and then the following Wednesday or Friday do Jason Aaron's run on Thor, then do a review on Monday. It really depends on how I can approach this and how it's going to be better for y'all to receive this content. So just stay tuned for that. Either way, those three episodes are more than likely going to happen. But remember, until then, I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.